Next presentation will be by Steve Campbell. Steve earned his MD at Harvard University Medical School, did a residency in internal medicine at the University of Hawaii, but then returned, all the way across the nation to Boston, where he did a psychiatry residency at Cambridge Hospital. He then joined the staff there in their consultation liaison program and finally, however, decided to return to Hawaii, where he has been in private group practice of psychiatry, also providing psychiatry consultation to internal medicine practices there. He has been in the Hawaii Medical for All group, which I believe formed around, 1980?
Late 90s,
okay. And was actually brought to the Hawaii Health Authority, and I'm sure he's going to describe all of this to you. And I should like to say he is also a member of Physicians for a National Health Program. So again, let's put our hands together and welcome Dr. Steve Campbell.
Thank you. First, I have no conflicts to disclose. Okay, I'm going to give the Hawaii timeline. First of all, in the 1970s, about 74, Hawaii passed the Prepaid Health Care Act. And right after that, the U.S. Congress passed the ERISA law, and Hawaii's congressional delegation got an exemption to the ERISA law, allowing us to continue our Prepaid Health Care Act. And that includes an employer mandate so that any employer who has an employee working 20 hours a week or more must provide that employee with health insurance. And up until recently, most provided family coverage. And this employer mandate has resulted in broader coverage. The law also mandates a broad benefit package and at least 80 to 90% actuarial value for the plans offered. So this is assured broad coverage. There are restrictions on pre-existing condition exclusions already in our law. And there's modified community rating, so they can't jack up the price too much if an employee in a small business gets sick. And this is led to pretty good coverage compared to other states at a relatively low cost. We have among the lowest health insurance premium costs in the country, best benefit package, and this is in the face of a high cost of living due to our Prepaid Health Care Act. In the mid-90s, the State Department of Human Services decided to implement managed care for Medicaid, for the general assistance and aid for dependent children populations, but not for the aged, blind, disabled, which is left as fee-for-service. And they initially had five local plans, all not-for-profit. Two of them have dropped out, so there's three left. And they were initially rather heavy-handed. It resulted in some reduction in physician participation, but then they backed off and became more reasonable over time. In the late 90s, around the same time, is when Healthcare for All Hawaii was founded. And they had a task force, a health futures task force that involved a number of legislators, insurance commissioner, representatives from organized labor, and other social justice advocacy groups who started working towards single payer. And they produced a report saying basically they were concerned that the Medicaid managed care program was going to put financial considerations above patient care considerations, and that we really should move beyond that to a universal system covering everybody. That group pushed for years to develop a single-payer law for Hawaii, and one of the spearheads of that movement was a woman named Akwan McElrath, who is a little Chinese woman who is a firebrand for social justice causes, and in particular for single-payer. And she died in 2008. And in 2009, in her honor, our legislature, which is dominated by Democrats in both houses, passed a bill, which you see before you, this is the heart of it, in her honor. And our then Republican governor, Linda Lingle, vetoed the bill, and the legislature came back in special session and overrode her veto. So this is now not a bill, it's a Hawaii law. She refused to appoint the board at the time, and everyone thought that that it was dead, even though it was on the books. But the law does not have a sunset date. And in 2010, we elected Governor Neil Abercrombie, who is our former congressman and who had been a co-sponsor of H.R. 676 when he was in the House. And he appointed the Hawaii Health Authority. And seven of the nine members, I'm on it, seven of the nine members are committed single-payer advocates. The other two were just appointed to vacancies, and their positions are not clear, but they don't have the votes to override the majority anyway. Okay, as you all know, I don't believe that either the cost or access problems in healthcare are going to be adequately solved by the Affordable Care Act. I think the problems are getting rapidly worse in terms of underinsurance and for Medicaid. The ACA relies on a Medicaid expansion, but Medicaid is a very dysfunctional program in most all states. And if we try to expand on something that's not working, we'll get even more that's not working. I already mentioned this, except I want to say that as a result of in 2009, the state DHS converted the aged, blind, disabled population to Medicaid-managed care, and this has been an absolute disaster. It has effectively driven the private sector out of Medicaid. You can no longer find any private sector doctors who will make it known that they're willing to take new Medicaid patients. There are zero psychiatrists in Honolulu who are willing to take new Medicaid patients, especially with those two plans for the aged, blind, disabled population, both of whom are subsidiaries of mainland, large, for-profit health insurance companies, United Health and WellCare. The Medicaid market is an individual market, and the individuals choose their plan. This means that if one of the two plans were to be better than the other, offer better benefits, treat doctors better, have better policies, all the patients who see their doctors a lot would be told to join that plan, and that plan would get a sicker population. The ones that don't see the doctor much would end up in the other plan disproportionately, and then the bad plan would be making more money, the good plan would be losing money, so you end up with a race to the bottom. They compete with each other to be the worst plan. I've already covered this. Okay, in 2008 actually, I submitted a resolution to the Hawaii Medical Association to support single-payer health insurance, and I never expected anything to come of it. The HMA had been dominated by conservatives for a number of years at that time, and I got up and defended the resolution, and to my amazement, it passed, and it passed by a large margin. And that led to my arm being twisted to run for office. I became treasurer of the HMA and then president-elect. I'm now president of the HMA on an openly single-payer platform. In 2009, the governor appointed the Hawaii Health Authority, and he also separately appointed the Hawaii Health Transformation Initiative, which is focused on implementing the Affordable Care Act. And he appointed these two bodies separately with no attempt to coordinate them. And I really think he just failed to think it through. And the Health Transformation Initiative leadership has been hostile to the Hawaii Health Authority. And we have had a couple of meetings with the governor over this, and he's basically told us to work together. I was appointed to the Hawaii Health Transformation Initiative as the liaison between the two, and one of the co-chairs of the Transformation Initiative is one of the new members of the Hawaii Health Authority, and the other, who's the chair, has been told to attend all of our meetings. So the intent is to bring us together. The Health Transformation Initiative has focused on things like patient-centered medical homes, community care networks, ACO-like organizations, payment reforms like pay-for-performance, shared savings, bundled payments, although the Committee on Payment Reform voted down bundled payments as being undesirable, but they still leave it in their plan. But these are all supposed to be added onto our existing system of competing health plans, including for Medicaid, which is, as I said, extremely dysfunctional. All of this adds administrative complexity and costs and doesn't address the problems in the system. So it's my job to try to convince Health Transformation Executive Committee that they need to abolish Medicaid managed care if we're going to get off the ground with any of this. The Hawaii Health Authority vision is that instead of starting with what we have and asking how can we make it better while trying to keep all current stakeholders happy, which is what the Health Transformation Initiative is doing, our vision starts with defining what a truly cost-effective system would look like and then ask how can we get there from here. This is my Mythbuster slide because these are all things that I feel are clear lessons from systems that have been proven to work that are the opposite of what is often assumed by politicians, business people, and the general public. The first is that when you have a universal system with full access to care for everybody, you actually enable large savings. Covering everybody does not actually cost more, it costs less. Nobody wants to believe that in politics, but it's actually true. Second is that competition in healthcare financing is always detrimental to the cost-effective delivery of care. This is also something nobody wants to believe is true. The American way is competition. But care coordination is directly undermined by competition. Competition introduces problems with adverse selection and competition for the best risk pool and cherry picking and incentivizes plans to deny or avoid covering care for sicker, more complex patients, all of which disappears with a universal system with a single risk pool. Competition adds cost without value. Fee-for-service is not the problem. Everyone is talking about the fee-for-service treadmill and we have too much care because of fee-for-service, but this is not actually the case. Other countries that use fee-for-service have much lower health care costs than we do. They cover everybody for 50 to 60% of what we do, and they use fee-for-service, and they don't even have managed care policies in place. So that can't possibly be true. Another reason is that a lot of the evidence that pointed to for there being a lot of unnecessary and inappropriate care is regional variations in Medicare spending. But the high and low spending areas use fee-for-service equally, so that cannot be the root of the problem. All the other things like pay for outcomes, bundle payment, capitation, what do they call it in Medicare where you have a DRG, the diagnosis-related groups, all those things are attempts to shift insurance risk onto providers to counter the supposed fee-for-service incentive to provide too much care. And all of them create incentives to avoid covering for sicker people because the easiest way to control your outcome is to cherry pick your patients. Again, you're dealing with an arena in which the risk is known for a high percentage of the population. So if you want to have good outcomes, you avoid the sicker people. Another is that if you want to get cost-effective care, you'll get much farther if you can get the doctors themselves to be conscious of cost-effectiveness than if you try to manage care from centrally by bureaucrats working for insurance companies or government. And so the trick is to get the doctors engaged in managing care themselves on the front lines. That's the only thing that's really been shown to make care more cost-effective. These are my principles for cost-effective healthcare redesign. And this is not at the level of, you know, broad principles like healthcare is a human right. These are the operational characteristics of the systems that have been shown to work. And I developed this list. PNHP has a similar list. It's not exactly the same, but has a lot of the same concepts in it. And I use this all the time, and especially in talking to people who are resistant to single payer. If they're proposing anything else, I use these to evaluate that proposal and point out why it would or wouldn't work. Okay, the Hawaii Health Authority, one of their first tasks was to submit a report to the governor and the legislature by December of last year, which we did, and it has four sections. The first is a critique of the status of Hawaii's Medicaid managed care program. The second is the principles that I just showed you. And the third is a roadmap. The goal is a universal single-payer system using a transitional strategy of a unified delivery system or an all-payer system. And this means that doctors are paid the same, hospitals are paid the same, you have the same provider network, and providers are paid the same regardless of the source of funding for an individual patient. So you take various streams of money, like Medicare, Medicaid, employers, all these things, and you put them in the same pot, and from there, everyone is treated equally. So it doesn't matter to a doctor if the patient's funding is from Medicaid or from a job. it's the same as far as the doctor is concerned. That eliminates barriers to care for Medicaid patients. It's been shown to work in Western Colorado, and it really has brought down Medicaid costs as well as overall costs for the system by ensuring universal access. We need to replace Medicaid managed care with Medicaid primary care case management. Now, Medicaid, this is a CMS term, PCCM, primary care case management. It's been pioneered in North Carolina. And what this means is that everybody gets a primary care provider, and you have community care teams that are designed to deal with those things that cannot be done out of a doctor's office. So that if a doctor takes on a complex, difficult patient who's non-compliant, they can call up the community care team and say, can you help me with this? I need someone to go out to the home, make sure they take their meds, make sure they come to their appointments, and do those kind of things in the community. And it has comprehensive benefits adequate for all medically necessary care. And this is much cheaper to administer because their quality improvement system relies on the frontline doctors managing care, not on central bureaucrats. It uses cooperation and collaboration, not competition, to improve the cost effectiveness of care. It assumes comprehensive responsibility for the whole Medicaid population so that the incentive is to bring everybody into care. And if you do that and keep them out of the emergency rooms in the hospital when it can be prevented, the savings are kept in the system and used to fund the community care coordination teams and to keep physician fees at essentially Medicare rates, which is higher than in any other state in the country, except for Western Colorado. The whole system then works like one big ACO instead of having competing ACOs trying to cherry-pick the healthy population. This could then be expanded from Medicaid to the insurance exchange. You have an all-payer exchange, same delivery system, same doctors, same benefits, all that. For the insurance exchange. So even if the feds require competing plans, they're just competing funding streams going into the same delivery system. So you use the same concept for the insurance exchange. Then you expand this to state and county employees and retirees. For Medicare, you can use a federal waiver if it's possible to get one, or if not, you can use a Medicare Advantage plan that's tied to this unified delivery system to bring in the Medicare population. I generally don't like Medicare Advantage, but this is a way of exploiting it to bring Medicare into a unified delivery system. And once the system gains enough market share, then you can start paying hospitals and integrated subsystems with global budgets and save billing costs, which are up to 20% of a hospital budget. With regard to integrated subsystems, we also have, Hawaii generally has two main plans in the commercial market, which is HMSA, a nonprofit local blue plan using independent providers, and Kaiser, which HMSA has about 70% market share, Kaiser is about 25%, and there's a couple of small plans with the remaining 5%. In order to get Kaiser's buy-in, we would want to allow Kaiser to be an integrated subsystem, which is paid on a capitated budget, within the global unified system. And the same idea is included in HR 676. You can have integrated systems as subsystems, not as competing systems. And then the overall system would make sure that Kaiser got paid appropriately for their patient population. If there were specialized services that couldn't be provided within Kaiser, those would be deducted from their budget and funded through the general system. But they would be part of the same system, so the incentive would be to make sure they were taken care of rather than to compete with them. For the independent doctors, I think it would be okay to retain fee-for-service, but I would recommend scrapping the resource-based relative value scale and evaluation and management procedure codes and using a pay-for-time system, where you base the fee on the training required to do that specialty and the overhead for that specialty. Those would be multipliers on your basic fee. But once you determine the fee for, say, a neurosurgeon or a psychiatrist, they're paid the same regardless of what task they're doing. They don't get paid more for doing a procedure than for doing a good history and physical exam. So it's a fee-for-time system, and I think this would strip out all the incentives to use pay-for-documentation and to game diagnosis and all the stuff that's going on to try to fight with the risk adjustment schemes that are being used to compensate for the perverse incentives in competing plans. I'm a little undecided about the bottom one, pay for quality incentives. I don't want any kind of payment scheme that will reward outcomes that can be gamed by cherry-picking patients. If you're doing something by paying a little extra for making sure people get immunizations or for getting hemoglobin A1Cs for diabetics, that might be okay. But once it gets into the possibility of gaming it by adjusting diagnosis codes, that has to be kept out. And I don't think that quality improvement incentives can possibly be applied to more than about 20 to 25% of healthcare, because the rest is too complex and you get into perverse unintended consequences if you try to go beyond what is accurately and meaningfully measurable. This would allow refocusing of health information technology resources on patient care and quality improvement, not on reimbursement. It would rely on continuous quality improvement and professionalism, not on financial incentives to keep care cost effective. The focus of reform should be on ensuring appropriate care for those who need it, not satisfying the interests of health plans. Hospitals and doctors are obviously essential, so it has to work for them, but the priority and the focus must be on ensuring access to appropriate quality care for everyone, both individual patients and population health. The last section of the Hawaii Health Authority proposal is an analysis of the financial implications. If we could get all the way to global budgets for hospitals and a revised fee structure for doctors and do the whole thing, we would save about 10 to 15% of total health spending for direct insurance administrative savings. I'd like to point out that even though the Affordable Care Act limits the medical loss ratio, the insurance industry managed to persuade Obama to include medical management as health care, not administration. And this means all the money the health plans spend on obstructing and denying care gets counted as health care, not as administration. And that's around 4% of total health care costs. Global budgets and no uncompensated care for hospitals would save 20% of their costs, or about 10% of total health spending. A single financing system would save about 10% of doctors' practice costs in Hawaii based on the Lewin Group study, and that's about 3% of total health spending. Bulk purchasing of drugs and durable medical equipment would save another 5%, and increase access to outpatient and primary care and professionally directed quality improvement would reduce ER and hospital costs and unnecessary and inappropriate care and fraud and abuse, saving another 10%. And that gets to around 40% savings and puts us in the same realm as Canada. Any questions?
So, very, very comprehensive proposal. Let's just deal with one question, and we will have, I hope, time at the end for more.
When you say that HHA was made into law, how does this actually now play out?
Okay.
Does this happen, or is this your dream of what might happen?
It is law, although we have not been able to instantly assume the authority that's in the law. So there's a process, and my role in Hawaii on the Health Transformation Initiative has been to try to bring them around, and I think I'm close to actually accomplishing that. And if the Health Transformation Initiative agrees to the HHA roadmap, that will put the HHA in the position of setting health policy, which is the first part of the law. Then we can finish the job of designing the universal system, applying for waivers, doing whatever we need to do to get it implemented, and we can use the resources. They've raised private funds for the Health Transformation Initiative, and we might be able to get more from the legislature to do a public education campaign and educate the public on what we're doing and why and what the rationale is and how it would work and things like that. And then we would actually end up doing what the law says.